Time for the Mary Griffith Show, Tuesday morning, February 18th. Dr. Brandon Breening is here with me, and this broadcast brought to you this morning and every morning by Hilbing Auto Body. Remember, when it happens to you, take it to Hilbing. And everybody is concerned when they get in a car accident about their car, and they should be. Old Dr. Terry Shaw used to say, by golly, if I could get people to take it to Shaw Clinic like they take it to Hilbing, we'd all be okay. And you're here today, doctor, not to talk about car accidents, but it is true. When you get in a car accident, if it crumbles metal, it probably did something to you.
It probably did. There's at least some tissue that was damaged in that. The degree of damage obviously varies from person to person, accident to accident.
Okay. But it's always a good idea to get checked out.
It is.
And coming up later in this hour, we're going to have an orthopedic surgeon here, so he'll probably talk about if it gets so bad, you have to have a bone put back in place.
Yes. Yeah. Well, if it's that bad, see him first.
If there's a bone sticking out, don't go to Dr. Brandon Breening first. Go to our next guest first. So what are we going to talk about today? You're always bringing a fascinating array of things that you study. I'm always impressed with your scholarship because a lot of times people, they love their practice, but they don't necessarily keep themselves motivated to keep learning all the time. And you seem to do that, Dr. Breening.
Well, then let me start with one of my most serious topics.
Okay.
I'm actually...
Wouldn't that be something about guinea pigs that need peg legs or something?
No,
I'm going to kick you out right now.
It actually sounds kind of ridiculous, and it is a bit ridiculous, but when I read into some of the other applications, I thought, well, that's not a horrible idea. But they have developed a low-cost, and don't ask me what low-cost actually means, because they don't say anywhere in the article, a low-cost smart diaper that can notify a caregiver when it's wet. So,
because while number two stinks, and you can kind of tell when they do number two, sometimes they can urinate quite frequently, and you don't necessarily know that, right?
Exactly. You know, a lot of diapers nowadays have that little line on them that will let you know if they've peed in it or not. That doesn't necessarily mean that's hard to check, right? If it's under clothes, it's hard to check. With a baby, I don't know that it's really a necessary thing. Most people are checking their babies. Maybe if at a daycare where there are hundreds of babies sitting there or in a nursery, at a hospital, intensive care, that sort of thing, that would be important. But the use that I saw was for bedridden adults. That are not catheterized or something like that. I thought, because at first when I saw the article, I thought, oh, geez, what is this? And then I read that, and I was like, oh, that's actually a great idea, so that those people aren't stuck in their bed all wet with nobody knowing, right? The nurse is going to come check on them in 2 hours, and they'll be wet for 2 hours, and that's bad for your skin. Even though the diapers we have today are probably the reason that kids don't potty train as well as they used to.
Because it's not uncomfortable.
They're dry all the time. So they don't care, especially boys. Boys are, oh my gosh, my boys were the hardest to potty train. My oldest potty trained at the same time as his sister, who's almost 2 years younger, and the other two, they just took forever. They just didn't care.
Well, and I've never had children, and I can pride myself on saying I've never changed a diaper. Came close, almost had to once, but didn't have to.
I didn't make you do that.
This is designed then. So how does this work? How does it work?
So they use an RFID tag, which is a near field tag,
radio frequency
that signals to a home station that says, oh, this diaper is wet. There has to be a sufficient amount of wet in the diaper in order for the frequency to actually conduct, because it's not constantly conducting. The diaper itself is not a conductive material, but when you put enough urination or water into that diaper, that gel becomes conductive, just enough that they can send that signal through there.
Okay, and again, this would be a wonderful application for nursing homes or hospitals, because we all know that sometimes they are a little understaffed.
Yeah.
And this is where you can get into some real problems if adults are laying around in their own urine. Or, number two, it could be a serious problem. So this is one way to alert someone immediately that a diaper is wet. We don't know how much they cost. It says it's, you know, relatively low cost. Well,
right.
But, again, if it's for patient comfort and health and for peace of mind for a family member to know, that would be something very worthwhile. But like you said, not so much for kids, because most of the time kids, parents are adept enough. And frankly, if you're negligent enough of your children that you're not checking, a radio device is probably not going to alert you to do that anyway.
Right.
Right. Okay. So moving on. Thank you for bringing up automatic diapers, just in
automatic
time for my old age.
Now we just need them to actually change themselves,
yes.
and then we'll have something.
We need Rosie the robot to be able to come in and do that. Okay. So what else is on your big agenda of brain power?
So they did a test on helmets to see how well they protected against shock waves. And it turns out that the World War I helmets are just as effective at handling shock waves as our current helmets are. I just thought that was
interesting.
No improvement
in the military in all those years for that?
So they have improved for dealing with blast protection, so ballistics and blunt impacts, but the actual shock wave that comes off when a large explosive is detonated, they protect the same. In fact, there was a French helmet that actually performed better than modern day helmets.
There's been a recent incident about this. When we had that attack where the U.S. military was attacked, President Trump came out and said no military personnel were injured. And he wasn't really telling a lie. They didn't have broken bones, blood. Nobody got, you know, a piece of shrapnel in the head. But they came to find out later that several hundred suffered concussive ramifications. So they were in their bunkers with all their gear on. They'd had warning to take cover, but that didn't help them with a concussive shock. I know you're really into the neuroscience of the brain. What could we do? Because would it be similar to what a football helmet is, or is that direct impact, where a concussive shock is almost a sound wave, isn't it?
It is a sound wave, yeah.
Okay.
So what could we do? I don't know. I'm sure there are people out there studying it. But the key is to stop the brain from shaking around. You have a very fragile thing that's sitting in a bunch of fluid, which is designed to protect it from gentle shocks, right? When I'm walking around, I'm not constantly concussing myself because it has that protection around it. But when you have these major shocks, there just isn't a lot that you can do to protect it from that we currently have. And that just shows that they need to do more work on that area in order to protect people. Now, fortunately for most of us aren't being concussed by shockwaves very often. But we need to do some more work for our folks in the military to make sure that they're protected.
Yeah, it's really shocking.
And minors could experience that too, because they deal with explosives all the time. Fortunately, they're usually at a safe distance, so where they don't have to worry about it. But there are certainly lots of applications that I probably am not thinking about.
Well, but Dr. Breeding, you bring up these points, and these are things that are being studied, and I think it's interesting to note that we haven't made that much progress, you know, since World War I on that particular kind of injury, which once we know that people are vulnerable to that, I think our enemies figured that out, and they took it to us, and now we have a bunch of concussed military members.
Luckily, we've made huge strides in how we deal with concussion these days, and we know a lot more about concussion. It's not just, shake it off and get back out there. You'll be fine. Here, smell these smelling salts.
Suck it up, Buttercup.
Right. Right. So.
Okay. So what else is on your big agenda? We'll have to have this to be the last one. It's kind of like the Great Karnak. Make this the best one of all.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know that this is the best one at all. But
we've had automatic diapers and concussive helmet needs repair.
Yeah, yeah.
What else is on your big list?
So this one actually has to do with depression. Yes, a happy topic to deal with. But depression memes may be a coping mechanism for people with mental illness is what they found. So what these are for people that don't know what a meme is, it's generally a picture from something in pop culture that is sometimes taken out of context. They will often use, they used to use one, the one with Boromir a lot, that says one does not simply, and then whatever it was that they wanted to say. Because he used to say, one does not simply walk into Mordor. But the meme gets changed to whatever people want. There's another one that started out as a cartoon with a dog in a house, and there's fire all around him, and he's sitting there. And he says, this is fine. And so people will label the fire as something, and they'll label the dog as something else, generally in pop culture, something that's going on at the time. There's the snarky one with Willy Wonka, with Gene Wilder, where he says, tell me again about how, and it's really something that he doesn't want to hear about.
Oh, okay.
So. But anyhow, these memes, they've been shown for people with depression that find them, they it helps with their depression. And I think the reason behind that, and they go into a lot of things, but the big reason I think behind that is knowing that you're not alone. Sometimes when you're depressed, it's all you can do to turn on your phone and look at the internet. You can't even get out of bed. And if you can find something there that brings you happiness, and know that, you know, you're not the only one that is hurting, that is suffering, I think that brings some solace to people and some happiness. And then it helps them to kind of move forward and to know that there's more out there.
So obviously it elevates the mood artificially because you're laughing and you're seeing these things. So why don't we, as a mental health group of professionals, why don't they invent like an anti-depression channel that's just like, you know, cat videos or,
yeah,
you know, things like that. So you can actually, I mean, laughter is the best medicine.
It is a great medicine.
It's not going to cure your depression. But if it can elevate you out of it enough to step forward and do some day-to-day tasks, that's important.
Right, right. Well, the number one activity that they recommend for depression is moving, getting out and walking. But if you're not happy enough that you have the motivation to get up and walk, you need something to get you there. So, you know, if this is what gets people there, if finding funny things is what gets people
like
there.
Like the Minister of Silly Walks from Monty Python.
Yes, yes.
So go out and imitate that today and get your exercise.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful sunny day. This will help most people with depression.
Oh, my
today.
Goodness.
Stare off to the horizon. Don't look directly at the sun. But actually just going out and opening your eyes wide and looking at that blue sky has great.
Not the sun, but the blue sky.
The blue sky has great medical
effect. Don't want you to have to see the optometrist.
Okay. If we want to have a consultation with Dr. Brandon Breening, where can we find your clinic and what is your phone number?
I'm at 1210 North 24th Street, right across from Reservoir Park. And the phone number is 217-223-6170.
Now go watch The Minister of Funny Walks. And have a great day.
You too.
Okay. Orthopedic medical doctor coming up next on The Mary Griffith Show. You stay tuned. It's February 18th. Well, we just heard from a chiropractor, and now we're going to hear from an orthopedic surgeon. Dr. Navasardian is here, and he's going to share with us a little bit about his practice at Quincy Medical Group and a little bit about himself. My first time meeting him, so we'll all meet him together. Good morning. Is your first name Doug?
It is Doug, yeah.
Doug. I won't call you Doug. I'll give you Dr. Navasardian, but I always like to know people's first names, too, just in case I have to yell at you, Doug, don't do that. So how many radio shows have you been on?
This will be the first one.
Okay, and I've done that many orthopedic surgeries. So we are really on an even playing field right now, and I feel you're no better or worse than me.
All right.
Okay.
Well, a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
It is a great pleasure to have you. Let's talk a little bit about coming to Quincy. You joined Quincy Medical Group in 2019, and as I'm a member of the Census Committee, and I'm also on a lot of civic boards, and I'm a native Quincy, and I always ask people, why did you come to Quincy? Because we want to kind of replicate you as much as we can.
Sure, yeah.
So
I don't know if you
want
to replicate me, but...
Well, I will take you.
Yeah, I came to Quincy really simply that they are very much focused at QMG on patient care and providing an unparalleled patient care experience. And for me, that is the reason why I became a doctor, is to be able to focus on the patient and have them... That's the only person I'm being beholden to. And so for me, that was huge. So when I met everyone at QMG, that was a very obvious fit for me. So.
Okay, great. So it was your fellow doctors, the camaraderie there that brought you.
Absolutely.
Are you married? Do you have a family?
No.
So you didn't have to worry about the school system or...
No, I'm married to orthopedics.
Okay.
That's the number one.
Well, ladies, we'll get that solved. You didn't know you were coming on a dating site.
No,
I didn't.
No.
But the reason I ask, it was too personal a question, but many times, you know, again, your primary reason for coming had to do totally with your work. A lot of other times we have to attract the wife, the children. We have to make that a good fit, too. So, but thank you for sharing that, because that's great. And we're glad that Quincy Medical Group was appealing to you, because we need doctors, and we definitely need orthopedic surgeons. So when does a person need to see an orthopedic surgeon? And I guess for those who don't even know what orthopedic means, let's start right there at the most
base level.
What is an orthopedic surgeon?
Sure. So an orthopedic surgeon is a surgeon which they provide care for basically any sort of musculoskeletal abnormality that requires surgery, particularly those in the extremities. So it can extend from fracture care to taking care of people with arthritis, or in my case, people with more soft tissue injuries like ACL ruptures or rotator cuff tears or bicep tendon tears, quadricep tendon tears, so a variety of things.
So the muscle that also joins the bone.
Correct.
Because orthopedic, I think of only as bone, but it's not. It's that muscle mass that joins that bone.
Absolutely.
That helps move the bone. The muscles move the bone.
Absolutely. So,
okay.
And in my case, that's really where I specialize.
Okay. So bones, muscles, and joints, surgical and non-surgical care. Well, let's talk about that. Tennis elbow, rotator cuff. You're going to help me out, because I miraculously have had a couple of broken ribs, but other than that, I've been pretty free from any kind of trauma like that. So what are some first symptoms that people start to, you know, like I think a lot about the knee. Now, that
sure.
may not be your specialty,
yeah,
but
sure.
that's a typical area where I go see an orthopedic surgeon because I need a knee replacement, right?
Right. That's one of the reasons. But, you know, the interesting thing about injuries is they can happen from, or the injuries that I see, they can happen just kind of coming on their own, or they can happen from a real acute injury. So in the case of the rotator cuff, for example, a vast majority of these are not from an acute event where someone fell or something to that effect. It'll be someone who had a gradual onset of pain. Oftentimes they find when they're lifting their arm out by their side, or when they're lifting overhead, or when they're sleeping, they start noticing pain that gets worse and worse, and then they start having difficulties with activities of daily living. And so that's often how they can present. That's one way. And another way, of course, would be an acute injury where if someone fell or was in an accident or something.
Or a baseball player hurling at 102 miles an hour could tear his rotator cuff, but you're not going to see that.
Well, no.
I mean, you can see it.
Yeah,
but I mean, that's not what the average person's going to present as.
Well, I would hope not. So most of the people I see, it'll be injuries that could occur at work. It could be injuries that occur at home. Or, as I said, they may just wake up one day and feel, now I can't lift my arm the same way. Or, you know, now I can't extend my knee the same way. Or, you know, so vast majority of what I see is shoulder and knee. So those being anywhere in the knee, ranging from, as I said, like ACL tears, meniscus tears, cartilage injuries, or similarly in the shoulder, rotator cuff tears, labrum tears, things along those lines.
Okay. And again, you know, it comes on gradually, and we tend to say, oh, I'll just take some ibuprofen, and I'll fight my way through it, because we don't have a magic internal x-ray machine where we can see where maybe that muscle is tearing.
Absolutely.
And so we keep repeating the motion,
mm-hmm.
or maybe even worse, we quit using that limb, and then we get kind of frozen up, because if you don't use it, you start to lose that motion.
And you bring on a very good point. That's a huge problem, is that people will start modifying their activities, and sometimes they can be hurting themselves with that. And it's not uncommon where someone would come in where they had a little bit of something going on with their shoulder, perhaps a small rotator cuff tear, then they stop using it the same way, they become weak, they lose range of motion, and that can be worse. And if you are ignoring these problems, hoping they'll go away, some of them might, but some of them may not. And in those cases, it's better to come in and be seen rather than just hoping that you can continue doing your labor job and that this thing will disappear.
Okay. It's very important that you not let it go too long. And this is where I'm sure you have the dilemma of perhaps like a athlete or a professional versus the average Joe on the street. Because every guy I know says, oh, fight through it. What was that? My husband played football. I said, are you injured or are you just hurt? Because if you're injured, we'll call an ambulance. If you're hurt, get up and go tackle. So I think a lot of people do try to drive through the pain, and that is the worst probably thing you can do, because you're just compounding it.
Right, and you can make something that would once be repairable not repairable by delaying treatment, and not everything requires surgery, but those tears that require surgery or would be best treated with surgery, if you sit on that for too long, you can be setting yourself up for failure.
Okay, and the longer you wait to get treated, the more pronounced the treatment will have to be, and the more prolonged the recovery usually is.
Sure, and it also depends on whether or not you can fix it at that point. You know, the hope would be that most injuries can be fixed, but there is some point that, depending on which injury you're speaking about, where there's the point of no return, and that's what we want to avoid.
Excuse me, I've talked to many orthopedic surgeons. They all think they're God. They don't think there's anything they can't fix.
Yeah, no.
You apparently have not been.
No.
Apparently those colleagues have not spoken.
No, I'd like to think most things.
But there is some limit to even your.
Well, yeah.
Not to yours, but in general.
I wouldn't like to think so, but I'm humble enough to say there is. So.
Well, we're going to talk about arthroscopic surgery and some of the treatments that you can get from Quincy Medical Group and Dr. Doug Navasartian. And it's great to meet him. We're glad he's part of our Quincy community. We're back. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Dr. Doug Navasartian is my guest today. He's with Quincy Medical Group. And if you have need of treatment for a rotator cuff, shoulder injury, joint injuries, knee surgery, if you fracture something, you're probably not going to call him on the phone to make an appointment. He'll meet you in the ER. But a lot of what he does is chronic problems. You know, when you break a bone, it's pretty obvious you need an orthopedic surgeon. But a lot of stuff the patients he sees, they've just had this chronic injury over time where they've torn muscles or they've worn down joints, and now it's time to maybe have some surgical care. And nobody likes to have the big, you know, number 9 foot saw blade come out and crack them open. So you specialize in a different kind of surgery. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the real specialty and my emphasis of focus is arthroscopic surgery. So arthroscopic surgery, we use a camera and very small instruments. They're approximately the size of a pen. And it's really like building a ship in a bottle. On the outside, you see very tiny incisions, but on the inside, there's a lot of work being done. And the benefit of that is it's minimally invasive, and the hope would be is that there's less morbidity to the patients with that.
And so once you make that insertion in there, which, of course, they're under anesthesia, they're not
right.
feeling that, then once you're inside the chamber, you mm-hmm. know, you move around and you see with the camera and with your natural eye what's going on in there, and you're taking away bone chips or whatever, and you're repairing all the damage that's been done.
Absolutely. So with the camera, you can see everything in the joint, and it ends up allowing you to directly visualize things you wouldn't have been able to. So years ago, before arthroscopic surgery, an ACL, for example, would have been done open, which was a huge whack to the patient. And now we don't have to do that, and that's a big advancement.
How come I hear about knee replacements all the time, but I don't ever hear anybody say I had my rotator cuff replaced? Do you ever have?
Oh, yeah. So especially here in Quincy, I would say majority of what I see is rotator cuffs. And that's what I really like about Quincy in particular, is a lot of the patients are a lot of the people you spoke about who kind of ignore things, and they're hardworking people and they want to get back to work. So by the time they come to see me, unfortunately for them, oftentimes they've had an injury brewing for some time that could have been dealt with much sooner, but they can have a rotator cuff for years and not know about it, or it maybe just came on. But by the time they come to see me, you know, they may be far along into this disease process.
So do you replace rotator cuffs?
So we don't.
I've never heard of that.
Sure, that's a good question. So we don't replace it. We'll repair it.
Okay.
And there's certainly ways you can augment a repair, especially now there's a different procedure, superior capsule reconstruction.
That's, I was going to say that, yeah.
Yeah, of course. That's rarely what we have to do. But more times than not, you can repair the rotator cuff, and the hope is to bring it back to its normal anatomy. And often you can do as close as you can to that.
I think a lot of people are just blown away by the fact that something that, you know, 50 years ago, the average surgeon wouldn't even attempt. You'd have to go to New York City or something to even get somebody to even. Now, you do this here.
Absolutely.
In Quincy, and it's just a routine thing. And cleaning up people's rotator cuffs and getting them back on track. And that's why I think you're encouraged to come on the show today, to let people know that have shoulder and that kind of joint pain, don't keep going, because the longer you wait, the harder it is to repair. It can be repaired, but it's just like everything else.
Sure.
You don't want it to keep going and going and going, and you'll feel so much better.
Absolutely. And you may alter your outcomes by waiting. And you, just to make one point, you absolutely do not need to go to New York. That's one of the reasons why I came here, is to bring those set of skills to Quincy. You know, yes, there is this sort of surgery being done elsewhere in bigger cities, but now it's here in Quincy. So I would just recommend that if someone is having a shoulder injury or a knee injury, that they don't just simply ignore it, and they can find care here at home.
One of the great things, too, is Quincy Medical Group has teamed up with Carthage Memorial, and you're one of the doctors that's going to be see patients at Carthage Memorial now,
yes.
Right? Okay, because that's
really
an area that, again, you're going to have a lot of farmers there,
yeah,
and you're going to have a lot of people who are laborers,
absolutely.
And they're going to be, your hardest thing will be to get them to come in to be a patient, because again, you know, suck it up, buttercup, let's drive through this. And so there's really no need to be in that kind of pain, and I guess the number one message you want to give is, it doesn't resolve on its own.
Oftentimes, you will be making it worse by sitting there hoping that it will, and you know, the farmers, the laborers, the carpenters, those sort of patients are quite frankly my favorite, because when they come in, their goal is to get back to work, get back to life, and I'm able to provide that for them. And that means a great deal to me.
Is rotator cuff injury more in men or women, or does it matter?
So, you know, you'll see it in a combination of both. It's unfortunately very common. People, when they come in, they may feel like it's not coming from their shoulder, because it's a very vague type pain. They may often just have pain when they're sleeping, and that it may wake them up. They may want to toss and turn, feeling like they can't get a comfortable position. So it's a widespread problem.
Okay. Well, we're very glad to have met you, Dr. Doug Navasartian. Quincy Medical Group is where he sees patients. You can call today to schedule an appointment at the Quincy office at 222-6550 or up in Carthage. And go to quincymedgroup.com for more information. And you are taking new patients.
Absolutely.
And again, we don't want anybody to go out there and hurt themselves just to see Dr. Navasartian. But he's there if you need him, and you may not even know you need him. So if your knee's hurt, if your shoulder's hurt, whatever it is, he'd be willing to look at you. And you also take referrals, of course, from your fellow colleagues.
Of course. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was a pleasure to
meet
you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We'll have to have you back again real soon.
Please.